I have
current geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Current Geek, talk show about items items of interest in the geeks to the geeks of the world. And you, I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merrick. Good morning, Tom. Afternoon, evening.
Try to change up my gavel timing.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It sounded like it fell, but I think that was just the way it sounded.
Just real quick. All right. Try to squeeze it in on
this. I actually am doing a thing that's very dangerous. I have this Dr. Pepper open, and if you may remember, a couple of episodes ago, I knocked this into my keyboard. And my escape key is mushy now, so I'm going
to
put that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a trick. This is not a fake Dr. Pepper bottle. Scott Johnson will attempt to do the entire Current Geek show with this Dr. Pepper bottle poised dangerously above his keyboard.
Yep. And I'm not going to spill it this time. Last time was a fluke, but this is not a fluke. We're black. No, we're black. We're back, and Tom's here. Tom, welcome back. It's good to be here. How was your week? How were things?
Oh, it was lovely. You know, I do an entire newsletter that tells you how my week is every week.
Oh my gosh.
FreeTomNewsletter.com. No spoiler, but this week's going good.
Well, good. Do you feel like that's a cathartic experience for you to kind of get all that out in one place? Or is it you do that anyway?
A little bit. Yeah. It kind of allows me to sit there and go like, see, this is why I didn't get back to you on email.
Ah, well, I'll learn from you one day. Excellent.
I don't know if it really works that way.
Let's find out what's happening in today's top stories.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what happened since we last talked?
So people on our subreddit wanted us to talk about this in an interview in Collider in April 2018, as passed along by CNET recently. This is an interview done before Solo, a Star Wars story, comes out, and you'll see why that's important in a second. Mark Hamill was asked what order he thought people should watch the Star Wars movies in. Mark Hamill said, the order they came out in. He's like, I don't know. What are you talking about? Why would there be another order? I didn't want to talk about the machete order. Maybe he hadn't heard of it or whatever. Then as he is talking out loud about this, he realizes, well, wait a minute. The events of Rogue One take place before episode 4. So he's like, okay, I watch Rogue One between episode 3 and episode 4, but otherwise just watch them in order.
Yeah. Did he just forget that the prequels exist though? Because those he doesn't mean release order. He means chronological, like story order.
Yes. Episode 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you know what? If someone asked me, I'd probably say the same thing. Like, what do you suppose? I know that there's a fancy way to do it. A couple of ways to do it. And I know there's re-edits and I know there's other stuff, but you know what? Just start at 1. And wish that those 3 were better, and then go into 4 and go, okay, here we go. And then,
You know what? He changes his answer a few times. Mm. He says, I think the way they were chronologically released, but then he admitted watching them in order they take place episode wise has its merits. So he did say, like you said, to watch them the way they were released first, then he changed his mind.
Okay. So it sounds like he hasn't given a lot of thought, which surprises me a little bit.
No, I don't think he had. I think it was weird too that CNET picked the story up last week. Like, I guess they were looking for things to put Star Wars in the title. Went during Star Wars Celebration or whatever.
Yeah,
is like a year old interview. But
yeah, this last weekend was a big, big time of year for Star Wars, and so they were trying to get, you know, a little ramped up readership or whatever. But I don't know the last time somebody even asked me this, not that I associate with too many people that haven't seen Star Wars, but, there's always conversations about, hey, are the prequels even worth watching anymore? Or things like that. And I usually say, well, your mileage may vary, but if you got a bunch of time to burn, there's not much harm in it. You might regret it a little bit if you watch those 3, but as far as order goes,
I always feel like Phantom Menace needs to be like an hour.
Yeah.
Like a heavy edit.
Yeah.
I find moments that I just don't want to tolerate in the other 2 movies, but then stretches that I enjoy. So again, less of an edit, but I feel like they all just need an edit. And then I put myself in the headspace of these are made for TV movie versions of what really happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And that sort of helps. Well, we're getting episode 9. We got our trailer this weekend with a teaser showing all the friends, Rey and Finn and Poe and BB-8.
Yeah, Mad Max Fury Poe.
Kylo.
Yep, Kylo Ren.
Mad Max Ray Road.
Or Fury Poe is what I've heard, which is pretty good.
Fury Poe. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because right? he's in like a barge thing and he's out in the desert. Yeah.
And even though C-3PO isn't tied to the front with a guitar, kind of works.
He's sort of tied. He's kind of holding on for dear life.
To the mast, it looked like.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. But I got this thing with Star Wars. I always feel like it's at its best when it's in a desert planet setting. And so I'm excited to say that really, a huge portion of that trailer, and there's theories going around about some of it might be a dream sequence and blah, 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 blah. But big parts of the trailer set in the desert, which is good.
Hold on. You said Star Wars is at its best when it's partly set in a desert planet.
Yeah.
Which would mean you think Phantom Menace is better than Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. All right, now I have to rethink my whole life. Let me think for a
second. I'm not claiming that's what you said. I'm just showing you an implication of your words.
Oh, okay, take it back. I need...
it would mean Empire is one of the worst movies, too.
Yeah, that really does screw that up. And you know what? As a kid, I kind of did feel that way. I didn't like the snow. Like, I found it kind of off-putting and depressing to have that much snow and that much cold all the time, like on Hoth. And I know things warmed up later at the Gas Giant and all that, but...
Quite a bit.
things warm up when there's a lot of gas, I figure.
That was nice seeing Lando in the Millennium Falcon, wasn't it?
Yeah. Isn't there some line from Star Wars or either Empire or maybe in the third, it may have been Return of the Jedi, but somewhere he said, I'm going to get this. Or maybe it was in that end part of Solo, but he said something to the effect of, I'm going to get my hands on that ship again somehow, or somehow I'm going to be flying that thing again. Yep. And I guess technically he did that in
Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, exactly. Or in 6, rather. Yeah. So here he is with a chance to do it again in 9. I was happy to see him. I mean, there's a lot to say about that trailer from top to bottom. I guess my overall impression is I was coming to this one feeling a little spent on Star Wars in terms of maybe it was all a little too much too quick kind of out of the studio. They're trying to Marvel this thing, and I don't think that worked as well as they'd hoped. And so coming up to 9 and some of the negativity that Rian Johnson's episode 8 got, I was feeling a little fatigued. And I thought, when this hits, I'm not going to be all that stoked. Then I saw the trailer, and I think it's a really good trailer. It does everything a teaser should do. And it got me super excited. So now I'm flipped completely and totally jazzed for episode 9. It's a big deal. It's the end of a new trilogy. It's the end of an arc. It's a big deal.
It's the end of the entire 9 episode run of the Skywalker saga.
Yeah. That's huge, isn't it? That's a big deal. Yeah. Like, we should see it for the big deal that it is.
J.J. Abrams is crumpling under the pressure of this. I can't imagine he wouldn't be.
I think he's absolutely the right human being for this because much with episode 7, I think he knows what people want with Star Wars, and he is more than willing to give them that. And even if we may see that as flimsy later, when the movie hits, we're all going to be stoked to see the things we want to see. And then a lot of those things are tropes that have been here since the 70s with Star Wars.
I am looking forward to it quite a bit. I will save my speculations on what I think Palpatine's laugh means for those who want to go check out Let's Talk About Star Wars at letstalkaboutstarwars.com, where Jenny Josephson, Garrett Weinzierl, and myself speculate ad nauseum and break down the trailer. But I am not put off by it. Some people are like, oh, great. I wanted Kylo to be the big evil. I still think Kylo is going to be the big evil in this. So I'm just hanging there.
Well, here's my little extended theory. I think Kylo is a medium to why we get the Emperor back in some way.
I think the Emperor had a plan, a contingency plan, which has been treated in the extended universe books. And I think that Kylo will be tempted to pursue that plan.
Yeah. He's like Hitler.
But they would be wanting to stop Kylo from doing
it. Yeah. The most evil people this planet had ever seen, they always had a contingency plan. Like Hitler, Hitler lives in South America somewhere. I know you've heard the rumors. But like, that's the same kind of deal here. Why wouldn't he have a plan?
Godwin's Law, our Star Wars conversation.
I kind of did. But what I'm saying is, I'm fine with it. It's a big, crazy saga with magical stuff that happens with the Force, and who cares? Like, it's going to be a great time. I've heard some complain that this is just JJ fixing stuff that Rian Johnson blew apart, like a lightsaber of a particular note, helmet.
Look, if that is the narrative that entertains you, you can absolutely make that narrative work.
Yeah, Sure.
That doesn't mean it's what happened.
No.
Doesn't mean it's not what happened. It just means like, if that's what you're looking to make fit in your head, you can do it for sure.
Yeah. It just looks good. So bring it on. I'm ready. We got what, November? Something or other in November?
December. Comes out December.
Or December is what I meant. I guess I was wishful thinking, was hoping for sooner. But
yeah, December 20th, I think, in the U.S. anyway.
All right. Well, more Star Wars coming, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Also, a black hole. We took a picture of it. You probably have already heard all about it because it happened in the last couple of weeks. But the first image of a black hole was taken tracing the outline of the Messier 87 galaxy's black hole. Black holes are generally in the middle of galaxies if they're not out on their own. It's 55 million light years from Earth. Image was captured by the Event Horizon Telescope, which is a network of 8 radio telescopes spanning the globe with locations in Antarctica, Spain, Chile, etc., in an effort to involve more than 200 scientists in an effort, not an effort to involve, but an effort that did involve more than 200 scientists. Computer scientist Dr. Katie Bauman has become sort of the face of the effort. She came up with a new algorithm to stitch together the data collected across the EHT network. And the image gives the first direct glimpse of a black hole's accretion disk. Obviously, you can't see the black hole because you can't see a black hole. But you see a big black space where the black hole is. That's why they call it a black hole.
Yeah, it's the blackest of holes. Of all the holes I've ever seen, they're the blackest.
Of all the holes in all the world, she had to walk in. Wait,
my favorite thing about it, the memes have been incredible. that, of course, being the important part of this. Is that the world can take these memes, but I think it's easy to forget just how monumental this is. And my favorite outcome of all of it was the photo of the lady what came up with the algorithm. Yeah, that's her. You said her name and I forgot it already. But she made the happiest face in a sort of reaction photo at the moment she realized that this image depicted exactly what it depicted, and it's fantastic. And this will be remembered for a really long time. So I say well done and good job. And hopefully we also learn some stuff about the nature of black holes and not
the
just
real black hole was the friends we know.
We left behind. Exactly. There's a really good Beavis meme.
Friends we angered along the way.
I wish I could find this Beavis meme. It's very funny and I can't find it, but it's something about black holes and Beavis and it made me laugh, and if I do it now, I'll botch it, so I'm not going to try.
I am Black Holio.
That's it. I am Black Holio. I need... What was it he needs for his black hole?
PP for his black hole.
Something like that. But it made me laugh because I'm 12 at heart, and that was great. But also, my science part, the part of me that's old and mature, is really stoked about this. And I knew you would be because you're...
That I, who don't really even like that sort of humor nearly as much as you, could remember I need TP for my thing.
I don't know. I thought I was breaking new ground with you today. Like, whoa, wait a minute. Tom's a Beavis and Butthead closeted fan.
I mean, I did watch it in the 90s in Austin, for sure. I saw Frog Baseball at the Ike and Mike's,
you know, where they make the candy. It was fantastic.
Yeah. At the animation... film thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not as distant as you think.
Well, bottom line. Oh, there it is. Someone found it. Thank you, Desuriel. Let's take a look. It says, I am the great bad Black Holio. I need neutrons for my space hole.
Neutrons.
Yeah. Nice. Even more science-y. See.
Good take on. Good take on.
And it's got Beavis's little face in the hole, and it's the actual image with his arm sticking out. And anyway, whatever. As meme material, it's priceless. As scientific progress, perhaps even more important.
Thank you. Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted Festival.
I also went to those.
Love those.
You and I are weird kindred spirits with a lot of stuff, and this is a new one that now we're just finding out about. I used to love that stuff. And that's why, you know what? That's why I like that. That's why I love that Love Robots and Love Death and Robots thing. Mm-hmm. Because there's a hint of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the same, but there's like a, I don't know, I miss that kind of approach to just what if ideas all in animation. It was the first time I ever saw a Pixar short. Was it one of those? And this is long before they were, you know, Disney.
It's funny too. Like with Spike and Mike, you would go to the theater, you'd pay your money and you'd sit down and you're like, okay, throw some stuff at me. I'm here for it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Cause you made a point to go there and you weren't doing anything else. Mm-hmm. I think with Netflix, one of the problems is you can easily go like, well, you know, I could choose to do something else. Click away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it can cause you to not be in the right frame of mind to just accept what's being thrown at you. And so you may cause yourself, I'm talking about myself here. I may be causing myself to enjoy it less because of that. Whereas if I just kind of, you know, put a seatbelt on the couch or like, all right, I'm in, mm-hmm. nobody's going to bother me. I'd be in a better frame of mind for that. Cause it's not like I liked every single thing in Spike and Mike's.
Sure. Same.
But I always came away with, you know, No Neck Joe or some other cool bit that mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that was really good. That was funny.
And for me, it was just such inspiration for, I wanted to draw comics constantly and I just wanted to copy this. I wanted to animate. Like, it just felt like this creative outlet that you got nowhere else. And
yeah.
I loved it. I loved Liquid Television for the same reason. So I don't know how we got from here to there, but thank you, Black Hole, for getting us to talk about Spike and Mike's Animation Festival.
Thank you, Messier87 Black Hole.
Well,
you're
done.
The best. Fawlty Towers was named the British best comedy of all time. Channel 4 sitcom Father Ted from Arthur Matthews and Graham Lynham came in second. I'm Alan Partridge came in third, and Blackadder came in fourth. The list was voted on by 42 comedy experts, including Matthews, Lynham, and Richard Curtis, as well as Barry Cryer and Alison Graham, amongst others. So even though Lynham was involved, his stuff didn't immediately win. He had to get voted up by all the other folks. I like that there were 42 comedy mm-hmm. experts. That's mm-hmm. well played.
It's pretty good.
But yeah, look at that. Scott, your favorite is validated.
Do you, and I agree with this list pretty much, I would have probably put... it's not fair, but I think Red Dwarf belongs on there, but I don't know where. I know it's weird and hard to qualify, and it's not exactly.
I'm Alan Partridge is the only one I've never seen. I've never seen I'm Alan Partridge, so I can't speak to that. Only Fools and Horses came in sixth. The Office UK came in 12th. Mm-hmm. I don't know the rest of the list. Red Dwarf might be on there.
Might be, yeah. They don't have it here. But I will say, yeah, Fawlty Towers, 100% agree with this. I just watched it again. You and I watched the pilot, but I've watched it. I think I've seen all 12 episodes twice through since you and I last did that.
That's just how much since we did the autopilot
yeah.
episode.
You've and they're only 12 episodes total, so it's easy to do 12. You know, they're half hour each or whatever, 25 minutes. So they're not very long or anything, but I just find them all to be incredibly classic and funny, and I don't get tired of a rewatch. I could watch it now. I could watch it again tomorrow. It just wouldn't be a problem. And I don't feel that way about most television. Very few exceptions. I can do that with most Futurama episodes. I can do that with a few other comedies. Most are animated, to be honest. But in this case, it's just the... Just the best television comedy of all time. I think that's not an overstatement from me. So take that. Wow.
I'm trying to find this RadioTimes.com website to see if I can get to the source list. And they don't seem to... have it listed, although there is an intriguing clickbait headline. J.J. Abrams explains the reason behind his provocative title for Star Wars Episode 9.
Ooh, how provocative is it?
He says it fulfills a weird responsibility of bringing the 9-film franchise to an end.
Huh. Okay.
And the true meaning will become clear upon seeing the film. That's such clickbait.
That is such clickbait. Oh, my gosh.
He explains that the meaning is something you'll know after you watch the movie.
There is some baity, clicky McBaity going on there.
Thanks a lot, Radio Times. Yeah. And thanks for letting the Telegraph tell me about your list. But yeah, I think Fawlty Towers deserves its position there. I'm a big fan of the Blackadder. I'm a big fan of Father Ted. I'm glad it came in second. Have you ever watched Father Ted?
I haven't. So you and I need to swap places on Father Ted and I Am Alan Partridge, because I have seen a bunch of that, and that's okay. A great little show. And
that's
totally
a deal.
Yeah. So let's do that. Let's. In fact, maybe for our autopilot, we'll do those two at some point.
We could do a little pairing.
But I've heard about Father Ted forever, and I just have never. I don't know if it's just never been available or easily available to me. I never saw it in reruns when I was younger, but I don't think it was on. It's newer, right? Newish-er than, well, certainly
it's
newer
from
than,
the 90s.
Yeah, so I think in the 90s I was maybe less access to that stuff than I had in the 80s, so yeah, I don't know.
I ended up watching it quite a bit later on Hulu.
Yeah, and you, oh, yeah. So it's on Hulu now? Can I get it now?
I can't remember if it's still on Hulu. That's where I ended up watching it. Well, yeah.
Yeah, Okay, well, I have no excuse.
It might be on Prime Video now, right. Actually.
Well, I have no excuse. I'm going to watch it. I mean, if I can watch Fawlty Towers two times over in 2 weeks, I think I can probably manage a Father Ted or two. I'll get that going.
Ah, TVZ Gun has found the link to the full list here, and Red Dwarf is not on it. Sad to say.
I mean, look, I get that it's weird and kind of hard to define, and it's not exactly pure comedy or any of that stuff. I have such fond feelings for it, though.
Absolutely fabulous at number 9. That's another one I liked quite a bit.
Yeah,
The Young Ones, number 16.
I used to love The Young Ones. They're so good. Okay, yeah. Can you tell me if Are You Being Served is on that list?
Not on here. Not on here.
It's because it's fun, but not that funny. It's
maybe, yeah.
Low.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable, but it's not crack-up hilarious.
No, it's not that funny. But, okay.
What else is not on here? Mm. Monty Python's Flying Circus.
What? Okay, if that's not on there, then that does lead me to believe the list is aiming.
Oh, well, it's a sitcom list.
Yeah, they're aiming more.
It probably doesn't qualify.
Exactly. And maybe Red Dwarf may not qualify either. It's weird.
As a sitcom, Red Dwarf may be a comedy sci-fi or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's also very odd. And I don't think there's a laugh track in it. Not that that's the defining feature.
I don't think that matters.
I mean, it shouldn't matter.
The Thick of It's on here. That's another good
thing. The Thick of It. Oh, I don't know what that is.
You're in it.
Oh, well, now I'm in the thick of it. Who knew? Yeah. Well, that's fine. Go look at the list, everybody. You can find it on the Telegraph, and they'll tell you exactly what you need to know.
Yes, yeah, so you get the Telegraph being the newspaper website, not meaning that you need to go down to your Western Union.
No,
to
find. Don't do that. Beep,
beep, beep, beep. Hey, Avengers Endgame is a movie coming out in a little over a week, week and a half or so. And pre-sales of the tickets happened recently, and we're really good.
Yeah.
Scott, this is good news for you. Team Frog Pants, who has Avengers Endgame in the movie draft. Avengers Endgame crashed several ticket sales sites and passed Avengers Infinity War for 1 week sales on Fandango.
Yeah, it's performing as I had hoped, but it's still the big hang up. We don't get too excited about our pick because it's literally the only film we have. And because of that,
it may be the only one you need. I mean, you have one other that's going to make you like $3 million. So maybe you'll win by $3 million and that'll be the one that makes the difference.
This is true. We're going to see, at least I don't know how many people are going to see it, but I'm going to try to see it while we're in Vegas. And I'm very excited about it, but what I'd like to do is just remind everybody that they should spend their hard earned money to see Avengers Infinity War so that you can help pad me and Ibbot's chances of competing in the summer.
Yes, dude, literally what Scott just said.
Yeah.
See Avengers Infinity War.
Whoops. Sorry. I want you to see Avengers
Endgame. It's too late. You already asked them.
Endgame.
And then watch The Lion King and Aladdin.
The originals.
Which are the new ones.
No. See, I got you with your own trick.
Find it in there. No, I think you're going to do really well. Whether it ends up paying off as being pretty much your only movie, still a question. But if you wanted news that made you feel like you'd made the right choice, this is it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel good about it. So very excited. That's what like
you feel good about the movie itself, too.
I do. I think that's... That movie doesn't have to try too hard to make us all happy. I think it can. I mean, absolutely, there's a world where, in a scenario where it could be bad, okay? I'm not saying that's not possible. But they don't have to work too hard to get this right. Like, they just have to fan service us all, give us some resolution from the last part, take us to the MCU, you know, ultimate end, whatever that is. Right. And I don't think they have to do much more than that. And because of that, I think the job's easier than people think. I'm sure they feel pressure, but they really don't have to.
Set up for success in so many ways, right? Yes. Not that this isn't a complex project that could go wrong in lots of ways, which it absolutely can. It's not an easy job, but they have been given a good leg up. So, yeah, I'm very positive about it. I'm very hopeful. I will probably want to see it more than once. And I went and actually watched the Russo brothers directed first episode of Community this weekend.
Oh, I forgot they did that.
Yeah,
that's right. They had a He had a hand in that and some other TV projects.
I feel like it gave me a lot of clues.
Did it? Was it? Did anybody snap and half the school disappeared or anything weird like that? Or
yeah, that's the pilot episode of Community. Started halfway through, everyone disappears, and yeah. Then I can't tell you how they resolve it because that'd be giving away Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, you snapped and suddenly Chevy Chase is out of the cast. That's what happened. Well, fantastic. Yeah. We'll have lots
all
to say.
All revolves around Danny Pudi.
A lot to say about that movie post-release, which is, again, about a week and a half. And we wish them well. We also wish well to all our subredditors and submitters who find stories, coagulate them, and put them on our Reddit page so that Tom can give them credit. Well, that's not why they're doing it, but we're going to give them credit anyway. Tom, who helped us out this week?
Yeah, big thanks to Loop Guru, Tipo DeCinta, Robot Servant, and Action Nate. Who all submitted stories at currentgeek.reddit.com that were used in today's show. Thank you for submitting and voting. Keep it up. Don't forget, we rely on you to decide what we're going to talk about at currentgeek.reddit.com.
I want to draw Action Nate. I think that would be a fun
Action Nate
character to draw. Yeah,
you have to say it like that.
Action Nate.
Did you get my my sound effect?
No, do it again.
I sent you one before the show.
I didn't get it. Did you mail it?
Because I want to try this new segment out again called Keep On Roland.
Oh, right. Hold on.
Where I read a passage from French literary critic Roland Barthes' seminal work, Mythologies. So I sent you this sounder to kick off the segment.
Oh, that's perfect. No, we're not going to get in trouble for that one. That one's totally fine. Here, hold on. I'm gonna see if it plays here. Let's see.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, perfect.
Keep on Roland. Last week I read you one that was just a lot of post-structuralist words. This week I want to read you one that he wrote particularly about the Nautilus, the Jules Verne novel.
Okay.
All right.
I'm in. Let me get a little mood music going. Jules Verne.
Sit back.
A little bit of loungy 40s stuff. Okay. All right. I'm good.
All right. Here's what Roland Barthes says at the end of his chapter, The Nautilus and the Drunken Boat. In this mythology of seafaring, there is only one means to exorcise the possessive nature of the man on a ship. It is to eliminate the man and leave the ship on its own. The ship then is no longer a box, a habitat, an object that is owned. It becomes a traveling eye, which comes close to the infinite. It constantly begets departures. The object that is the true opposite of Verne's Nautilus is Rimbaud's drunken boat. The boat which says I, and freed from its concavity, can make man proceed from a psychoanalysis of the cave to a genuine poetics of exploration.
Whoa. I don't know what to make of that. So the boat, okay, let me just do a real world scenario here. I go to the dock, I got a boat there. It does all my bidding. It takes me where I want to go. I have it pull water skiers for me. I fish off of it. But one day I cut it free. I snap its rope. I cut the rope and off the boat just kind of starts to slush off.
From its concavity.
Its concavity out into the little zone there where they have the dummies to say slow down. And it's just sort of bobbing there. And let's assume there are no authorities who can do anything about this. My boat can now just float eternal in complete... not anonymity, but it is the id of all man is now float. It's just floating. Yeah. Right. Okay. I got it. I think. And then
what it does is it, allows you to proceed from a psychoanalysis of the cave to a genuine poetics of exploration.
Ah, I knew there was a missing link there and now I've got it. Excellent stuff.
There's
your
exploration
segment.
Is the unmanned boat. One might say.
I really like this. I don't know. I haven't heard anybody, any listeners write in about it in particular, but I would be curious what your feedback is.
Anyone who wants, especially post-structuralist literary critics, please write into us. Is it currentgeek@gmail.com?
It is.
And let us know what you think.
It certainly is. All right. Well, now we'll end the segment with this. Oh, that's all in my left ear. I'm going to make it stereo later. All right. all right. Nicely done. That was awesome. Let's move on to reminding people at home that thing you just heard, imagine a world without that. Imagine a Current Geek without that. Well, that's what you'd have if we didn't exist. Part of what helps us exist is your help over at patreon.com/currentgeek. And we would encourage you to go there now if you have not previous to this. Those who have, we owe you our thanks, and we'll give it to you continually. For some reason, my left ear keeps going out of... Hold on.
Come on. Come on.
Is it your ear or the headphones?
It's the... My mixer is shorting on the left ear.
So as long as it's not your ear going out.
No, my ear is good. My rear is good. And patrons are great. So go
and
there.
You are monk and boat.
That's right. It's patreon.com/currentgeek. Go there today and become a patron today. I said today twice. It doesn't matter. Now's this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Some years ago, we had a show called Forecast. It was actually spelled F-O-U-R because there were four people on that show who would predict things about the future of mankind. And sometimes it was near future, sometimes far flung. But when it went away, we decided we don't want it to go away completely. We're going to make it a segment on the show, and we did. So I present to you now Forecast, a prediction about the future from Tom Merritt. Tom, predict the future.
Programmable chip flavors.
My lead up was perfect for this really important humanity-focused thing you've come up with. Please explain.
This may or may not have been inspired by a bag of Doritos I was eating as I was preparing for Current Geek. But I think, I propose, I prognosticate, Scott,
yeah,
that someday you will buy a bag of snack chips that have no predestined flavor.
Ooh.
Now, the delivery medium will still be like a potato chip or a tortilla chip. You'd be choosing that type of chip, at least at this stage in the technology.
All right.
The flavor you could program perhaps from an app and say, you know what, I'm going to have this bag of chips and I want it to be nacho cheese flavor, or I want it to be barbecue or salt and vinegar, or I don't know, plum, whatever suits your fancy. You type that in. There's a little technology inside the bag that's able to dust all the chips equally with the right flavoring. And then as soon as you open the bag, boom, you've got the flavor you wanted right there.
I'm in on this idea. And in fact, can we? I would love it if we didn't just stick with chips. It'd be cool if we could do this across the board. All kinds of things could get flavored.
Well, I mean, anything that you can dust flavoring upon.
Right.
Yeah, I assume like puddings. Yeah. You could do this with puddings where, you know, maybe some self-stirring involved. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm into this. In fact, I was into this the other day because someone gave me a bag of Lay's barbecue chips. Now,
Hold on. Before you get down the Lay's barbecue chips, when the Fox says, why not have flavor packs you can just toss in your bag and shake it? What century is this, Win the Fox? Having to have a flavor pack, having to look through the flavor packs and choose them, having to open the bag, throw the flavor, having to be responsible for the dusting being. No.
Right.
This is modern. This is the modern world. Win the Fox.
That's like buying chicken.
The bag takes care of it all, and you have an app do it for you, so that you can just lay back and just let everything be taken care of. You don't want to have any agency in this bag of chips. I'm sorry. I just had to address that.
No, I'm glad you did, because that's kind of like buying... Win the Fox, would you go buy a packet of chicken ramen and a packet of beef ramen and then swap the flavors around just because you can? No! You want to program your ramen. By the way, ramen, a great example of a thing you could...
Oh, yeah. Ramen would be a great example.
So here's what I was going to say. Somebody handed me this little bag, like a just a normal snack bag size. It's a normal serving size of these barbecued Lay's chips. Now, I don't want to malign the entirety of the Lay's Corporation or whoever owns them now, Frito-Lay, whatever it is. I'm sure they're great, and some of your chips are great. I like your baked Lay's. There's a couple others that are pretty good. Salt and vinegar, top shelf. But your barbecue Lay's are terrible. They're terrible. They've always been terrible. They're bad now, and they'll probably always be bad.
Baked Lay's.
Those are okay. Barbecued baked are okay. I'll give you that one.
Okay.
It's all right.
All right.
But the baked, the non-baked, regular old fried chips, barbecue flavor, you can only go like three of those chips before you're sick of it. And it's greasy and it's gritty and they're just bad. So it was then that I could have used your fancy idea. I would have loved to have said, oh, this is the default is barbecue, but really I'm not in the mood. Beep, boop, beep, salt and vinegar, baby, out of the bag. So there's my real world need example. There was the need. Now we just need to facilitate the need.
Now, I've looked up on boardpanda.com some unusual potato chip flavors from around the world, and I would like to test you to say, would you potentially choose this flavor for your sometime future bag of chips? Are you ready?
Yeah. Am I, though?
Butter garlic scallop.
I'm going to say no. I don't want that.
No to butter garlic scallop.
No, that sounds terrible.
You were with me 2/3 of the way through, weren't you?
Kind of was.
Butter? Okay. Yeah. Garlic, maybe?
Garlic, yeah. Scallop. No fish. I don't want fishy chips.
You don't want fishy? What, fish and chips?
No, I don't even like fish and chips. I don't like fish. There's only one kind of fish for me, and it's like right out of the lake or the river, and anything else.
By the way, these are all real, available chips. So if anyone can, please buy them and send them to us. That'd be great.
I want to do like Canada, by the way, and just have ketchup. But anyway, go on. Continue.
How about wasabi ginger?
Yes, I would do that.
You would do that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Because it's spicy?
Yeah, but also I like those two flavors. And whenever I have them in other forms, I always enjoy them, except for the most obvious form, which is wasabi mixed with like... ginger on like a sushi tray or something. I don't those.
It's basically like a sushi flavored chip.
Yeah. I like the flavoring more than I like the texture of the stuff if it was actually there. So it would be good on a chip. I do it on a chip.
I did not think you would pick that one. I did think maybe you'd pick this next one. Bacon, mac and cheese.
Yes. Yes. All yes. 100% yes.
I mean, of course. You had me at bacon.
Yeah.
No, well, whatever else you want on
that. That sounds good.
How about grilled cheese and ketchup sandwich?
I would have said no to that a few years ago, but someone sent our morning show some ketchup flavored chips and they were amazing.
Okay.
Some Canadian stuff. And so the answer to that is absolutely yes, even though it's not purely just ketchup. I think the ketchup flavor is great for chips. In fact, I started taking plain, like regular Lay's. I'll dip those in ketchup and eat them. That's how much I like that. Yeah.
That's not such a bad idea.
Sounds good right now. Yeah.
Pigs in blanket flavor. These are Pringles, by the way.
Ooh.
They're pork, basically pork flavored chips.
It's a little stanky though. I think I couldn't go very long. So yes, I'll take a little bit. I'll take two or three of those chips. I don't want a whole tube.
All right.
Yeah.
How about borscht flavored chips?
Well, here's the funny thing about me and my life. I don't know what borscht is.
It's beets. It's beet soup.
Oh, then no is the answer. A definite no. Hard no.
Probably with a little sour cream flavor, because borscht usually is served with a dollop of sour cream.
I only ever heard it in reference to the borscht belt, which I assume was a part of the country where everyone eats borscht.
Yes. Okay. How about creamy garlic Caesar?
Caesar. Interesting. Probably more in the chip form than I like a Caesar salad. So yeah, I say yes. I like those flavors.
And finally, and these are a Lay's brand dipped in milk chocolate.
No, I've had these before actually, but it's the manual kind. Yeah, I've had people dip them in, you know, at a chocolate fountain. They'll have chips there. That's it's never good. I know people are like, oh, the salty and the sweet. It's a good combo. Not in this case. It's bad. No, thank you.
I've had a chocolate bar with potato chips mixed in. That was all right. You know me, I'll eat anything.
You'll try anything once, but you weren't rushing out to buy it again.
Right? No. And it wasn't because it was disgusting. I was just like, it just didn't add anything. And it was like, okay, I guess it adds a little crunch, kind of like having crisp rice, you know, like a Nestle Crunch or something. But
did any of these that you read, did any of these turn you off and make you go, no way, I'll try that?
No, I would eat all of those.
This is totally what I thought.
I would even eat the milk chocolate dipped potato chips because I'd want to see how that worked.
I mean, I just like to remind the audience who may or may not be aware of this, but at Nerdtacular 2013 or 14, I don't remember, I watched Tom wash a chocolate cake donut with frosting, wash one of those down with a bottle of Clamato. So that there is enough to explain. Whenever anyone says, oh, what is Tom like? I tell them that. And then they can just make whatever.
Like if I'm headed to Salt Lake City and Kim asks like, oh, what does Tom like to eat? Clamato and cake donuts. That's what you serve for dinner.
TVZ Gone, unofficial, but as far as I was concerned, official photographer of all things Nerdtacular, says that it was 2014. So There are pictures of this, right? We have shots of Tom drinking that crap somewhere.
Also the yogurt soda.
Mm. Oh my gosh, that was so bad. I mean, I know there's rumors that our bottle, as opposed to the other bottle, was maybe bad. It had gone south, and that yours was still okay.
The bottle I drank just tasted like yogurt soda. It didn't taste like it had gone off.
Ours tasted like a dead udder in the middle of the field. It was so bad.
The pickle juice, unrelated things, is pointing out the pickle juice was the least interesting of many of the Nerdtacular things that I got. Like, it just was like.
I'm that way too, though. I'll eat anything pickle flavored, so that stuff didn't really bother me.
But it just tasted like vinegar.
You're just a machine with that. And it's funny because I think of Tom as a man of taste. You know, like a guy who knows a thing is good or not and pays close attention. And he's not going to order just any wine or whatever. That's my image of you. But you have this side of you where it's like, you got a burger topped in a goat hair. Let's give that a shot.
And you're, sure, why not?
Yeah, why not?
As long as it's not going to poison me, I'll eat it.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got reasonable assurances that you're not going to get sick from it, then why not? I admire it. I wish I could do that. I can't do it.
I do like a wide variety of flavors.
Yeah. And you're not willing to just judge them based on they could be gross because it's seafood, or it could be gross.
I like chicken feet.
Oh, they taste like copper, though, don't you think?
No, it's just new.
Do you do the hearts as well when you go to like the Brazilian meat place on a skewer thing? Do you eat those?
I mean, I have, yeah. They don't really taste that different. I don't feel like it's worth it.
They're really bad. But again,
I like lengua. I like lengua, the tongue, beef tongue.
Do you like a good, you like kimchi?
Oh, yeah.
I do, all too, though. I love kimchi.
You know what I am regretting is we never ordered the Korean dish that moves.
Oh, is there a Korean dish that moves?
Where the tentacles are still squirming.
Oh, the one that you put the salt on or you put the soy on or whatever and it activates its nerves or whatever and makes it get all squiggly. Yeah, I've never tried that
either. There were some people sitting next to us that offered to let me try it, and I honestly turned them down because I felt like, oh, I don't want to take your food.
All right. That was the reason.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be because, oh, it seems to be alive and I am not here to hurt this creature. I'm just going to let it be. No, it's because they were, you know, you don't want to encroach.
I should order my own if I'm going to have it.
Well, when you do that, will you, A, get video, and then B, tell us what you thought.
Yeah. If we go back to Korea, I will make it a point to order it for sure.
Okay. I'm in. All right. Well, that was fun. I enjoyed that. Now let's do this. Whoops. Now let's do this. It's the best thing of all time this week. And this week, we both have things that we really liked this week. And they could perhaps be the greatest things of all time this week. Mine is being afraid of zombies again. It's been a while.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Like,
why is that?
Well, okay. So I don't feel like Walking Dead has been that scary for a long time.
Okay.
Even its notions of, it's the humans who are the worst part. It's not the dead. It's the living you worry about. You know, all those ideas. Pretty scary at first. Well depicted in those comics and then the show. But I feel like you go long enough, and I'm not pinging them for this and saying they're doing this poorly. I just think it's hard to make that relevant every time, every season, every episode. Whoa, I hear myself. Is that me hearing myself?
I don't hear. I mean, I hear you, but not twice.
You just hear me the one time?
Yeah.
Weird. Why am I hearing myself? Oh, no, I'm not. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, so they haven't been able to really get me, like, freaked out for a long time. It's all just sort of paint by numbers, and I keep looking for a zombie movie or television show that would really get me. And by get me, I mean, like, the underrated and I think better than 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later is something that scares the crap out of me. I love that movie.
Okay.
I think it's really good. A lot of people think that's controversial, but I think it's the better film. Anyway, I want something like that. It's been too long. And suddenly, out of nowhere, comes Black Summer on Netflix. Now, when I heard about Black Summer, I heard it was an 8-episode prequel to Z Nation, which I think is a ridiculous show, and I couldn't watch it for very long. I tried. I can't remember what network had it. It's canceled now. But it was competition, I guess, for The Walking Dead. But it was super silly and kind of over the top and way campy and B-movie on purpose. And I didn't like it. This which I guess is actually a prequel, takes a very different tact and goes very serious from top to end. And it's not perfect. There are a couple episodes I have some issues with, but for the most part, it revived the idea of what makes the undead or altered humans. They're more rage virus and less shambly, which actually is my preferred.
Well, that's like 28 days later, 28 weeks later.
Yeah, and I like that more. Some people think I'm crazy, but that's kind of my, that's my brand of zombie. They scare me more.
Did you try Kingdom?
I have not tried Kingdom. Tell me about
Kingdom.
Zombies
in there are rage zombies, but they are inactive during sunlight.
Oh, well, that's like, what's the Will Smith movie? I Am Legend, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it's their I Am Legend style.
Except zombies. Those are, I guess, vampires, but they played like zombies in that movie. But yeah, okay, no, I like the idea of, there's a game I play, Until Dawn, whatever it is, video game.
Is that with the fake Tom Merritt?
No, that's this awesome X-Files-like paranormal story that's like told in this 2D 90s way. It has a guy in there that looks just like you. He wears a fedora and everything, and I just can't help but call him video game Tom Merritt. But anyway, that's funny you brought that up. But this thing has some scenarios in it, because really what it does is it says, all right, here's 8 episodes. We don't need to do a lot of character exposition. We can do a little, but it doesn't need to be super elongated character arcs. What we really need to do is focus on the here and now. And the here and now is there are undead that are tearing people apart, and there are people who are being bad in this situation, and there are people that maybe were bad before that are good in this situation. But regardless, the task at hand is we're out of food. We need water. That place looks empty. Oh, no, it isn't. Oh, crap, we're running. Like, get to the zombie. Go, go, go. And it worked on me on several levels, and I loved it. So, excellent. Yeah, Black Summer. I liked it a lot and would recommend it to people. If you're a fan of the genre, I'm a fan of the genre, so, and I appear to be in good company. A lot of genre fans really seem to like it. It's a lot of talk and chatter about it. It's not going to be for everybody, but if you feel like the genre's gotten, not stale, but gotten predictable, this is a fun reminder that it can be unpredictable again. And people die that you don't expect to die, and they do it in ways that are spectacularly surprising. And, man, let's just say Barbara and the Window. That's not a spoiler. I'm just going to say Barbara and the Window. And when it happens, you'll know. And you'll go.
Black Summer on Netflix.
Yeah. 8 episodes. And some of, you know what's weird, Tom? This is the other thing I was just going to mention to you from a, this is maybe more of a Cord Killers thing, but this show has opted to do a little like Game of Thrones, except on the other end. Game of Thrones doesn't seem to care if they go over, you know, so the normal time of 45 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, right.
They'll be at an hour or an hour and 20 minutes, or sometimes it's a 2-hour thing without being split, and then sometimes it's just an hour. This thing does the same thing, except the hour's about the cap, and they sometimes, some episodes are like 25 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like short, and it didn't feel weird. Yeah,
usually if they're targeting 30 minutes or an hour, and they might go over, they might go short, a little tiny bit short. But you usually don't see a range of 25 to 54.
Right.
That's crazy.
And they also went straight to your throat as a binger because, and I noticed Netflix is doing this lately, they don't even run credits. Episode ends, next one starts.
Oh,
there's
wow.
No in between. There's no skip intro. There's no any of that. And the only time you ever see credits, kind of like Love, Death, and Robots, is at the very end of the last episode, number 8. I mean, you could manually do this anytime and choose an episode or whatever, but if you just start top to bottom, they are servicing you as if you are not going to budge until this is over. And I think I like it, but I also feel a little manipulated by it. It's hard to explain.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it probably feels like you got a little of your choice taken.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's.
But then you're enjoying it, so you're like, thank you for taking my choice away.
Yeah,
I'm
so
having a good time.
So in the end, it was like a long single shot almost. And I don't know who to recommend it to except for people. If you like zombie stuff and you want to be freaked out by them again, it made me jump multiple times and I'm not used to doing that. So
I know some people are over the zombie thing and that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're not, or if you're like, I would be into zombies if they were good. Sounds like this might be worth a look.
There it is. All right. Tell me about yours. What do you got going?
You know, I mentioned this a little more than a month ago as my best thing of all time this week when I started it. Harry Potter audiobooks. Back then, I had only started the second of the series after reading the first for Sword and Laser. Certain Laser has moved on to a whole new book, Theft of Swords by Michael J. Sullivan is the current book.
Yeah.
I kept going and listened to all seven of the Harry Potter audiobooks read by Jim Dale. So good.
They are so good.
Just so much more enjoyable for me than the movies story-wise. Mm-hmm. And I like the movies.
Right.
I went and rewatched the movies last year. I'm not saying anything bad about the movies, but you get so much story in the books that you don't get in the movies. And when you're listening to the audiobook, you get that feeling of being entertained versus reading and in a way that's almost like the best of both worlds.
Yeah. I'm jealous of you because I'd like to do, oh, I mean, I guess I can do it, but
yeah,
it's been a while for me. It's been a while for me. And I've done this exact same thing four times through by the time they got to book five. And then I listened to and read 6 and 7, but I never went back all the way through again. And I probably should.
It was fun binging on it too, because there are more connections between the books than I remembered.
Yeah.
And she does some things where, you know, she's reintroducing you to a concept because she thinks, well, it's probably been a while since you read the previous one, especially back when they were new. That you're like, yeah, I just heard that. But then there's other little things that get dropped and you're like, oh, that's related to that thing I just heard 3 hours ago. Okay, got it.
That's awesome. Well done. Seven. That was fast. We just talked about
this. I just kind of plowed through them, walking the dogs, doing chores, anything where, you know, I would normally be listening to podcasts. I was listening to Harry Potter books for a while.
Nice. Jim Dale, he's rad. I know the Europeans think that we have it wrong. But
Stephen Fry is amazing.
Of course.
And I wouldn't take anything away from him, but I thoroughly enjoyed Jim Dale's performance.
Yeah. For me, Stephen Fry is the voice of the Don't Panic book in that movie, because that's what he did in that.
Hitchhiker's Guide?
Yeah. He was the voice in that thing.
Yeah. To me, he's from Blackadder.
Oh, right.
One of the greatest comedies of all time.
It truly is. That's one I saw a lot of when I was younger. I feel like I need to watch it now with mature eyeballs.
I think I would like to do that too, actually.
Because I think I was all about the sight gags and didn't get any of the comedic timing or the just rapid fire dialogue and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was more of a Mr. Bean guy then, but I'm more of a Blackadder guy now.
I've always been a Blackadder guy.
Was Mr. Bean on that list?
I still like Mr. Bean. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, no, I do too. Nothing wrong with Mr. Bean.
But I discovered Blackadder first.
Right.
I think that's why.
I may have gone the other way, and it freaked me out at first because I think I saw Rowan Atkinson and I went, he's not. He can talk. He has like a voice.
Yeah, right. It's a little different.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Bean, I'm like, when is he going to talk?
Yeah.
I want to hear Rowan Atkinson be Rowan Atkinson.
That's weird.
The tall guy, the Jeff Goldblum movie, is the first time I ever saw Rowan Atkinson. That's what led me to Blackadder.
Oh my gosh! And 10 Speed and Brown Shoe, right?
No, 10 Speed and Brown Shoe led me to the tall guy.
Oh, okay. I knew it was in there. I knew somehow 10 Speed Brown Shoe.
I mean, 10 Speed and Brown Shoe led me to Jeff Goldblum. And then from there, you know.
I'm trying to think of the first Goldblum thing I ever saw was probably Silverado, the Western in 84, I think it was.
I wonder what the second, because 10 Speed and Brown Shoe was the first thing, obviously. And I was like, oh, from then on, it was like, oh, it's the guy from 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. but I think he was Brown Shoe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if like Jurassic Park was the second time I saw him, or The Fly.
Might have been the Fly. Yeah, Brundlefly. That's probably it. Oh, that's a good movie too. Anyway, hey, we're at the end of our rope here. I don't mean purely figuratively. I just mean we're at the end of our time, which means that we get to tell you fine folks before we leave a couple of quick things. One, if you stick around, you'll get a nice little segment from the Legal Geek this week. He's talking about the scandalous trademark ban argued over the Supreme Court, an update to the copyright infringement case in the Star Trek / Dr. Seuss mashup book, Oh, the Places You'll Boldly Go. Who knew that was going to end up getting litigated, but there it is. And so we got that going on. And you can leave us your voicemails and emails, currentgeek@gmail.com or 801-471-0462. Our next episode is an autopilot edition of the show, and it will be Farscape. I'm so excited for this.
I'm excited too. I can't wait to talk about it.
Oh, I loved it. I love Farscape so much. And I haven't seen the pilot in ages. So revisiting that world is going to be fantastic. We will bring it right here. And that's one I'm probably going to end up like, I won't be able to help it. I'll have to watch it through.
Yeah. You always end up just binging through everything.
It's because you pick these ones that I like. I don't know what's going on.
I'm still watching Simpsons from when we did that.
And I heard the news. I know there are a lot of people out there that want to hate on The Simpsons, but look, when I heard that Disney Plus was going to include all 30 seasons of The Simpsons on day one, I was already kind of in because the price is low. $6.99 is a really great introductory. I was surprised it was that low. I'm excited to start binging the hell out of The Simpsons. That thing's going to be on this house 24/7. So that's how it's going to be.
I mean, that's I basically got it in FX Now already.
That's true, I guess. Yeah, you can get it somewhere else.
So it's just moving to a different app that I'm going to get for The Mandalorian and 100 other reasons.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that I'm excited about Disney Plus. Mainly that it's not outpricing some other service. It's like low enough where I can justify it. So excited Indeed. About that. Tom Merritt, anything going on in your world before we go?
Yeah, like I mentioned, every week on Fridays, I put out a newsletter called This Week in Tom Merritt. It's at freetomnewsletter.com. It's a free newsletter that frees me from worrying about how to tell you about the things I do. It'll have updates about the books I'm writing. It'll have links to all the shows that I do, upcoming guest appearances, things like that. So go check it out, folks. Subscribe and get in the know. There are also some funny gifts included. freetomnewsletter.com.
Very nice. I also mentioned a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago, I can't remember, but I'm doing a short interview series with retired video game legend Chris Metzen. And today I posted episode 2, part 2 of what now looks like a 3-part series. I was this close to doing a fourth, but I think the way the edit worked, we're going to have 3
total.
And
it is the Empire Strikes Back of these 3 interviews.
Yeah. Nothing but puppets in the third one. I'm pretty excited about that. So anyway, it's been a real fun road, and so far people have been really enjoying it. If you get episode 2 right now on either the Instance feed or the Core feed, or you can get it on the Frog Pants Mega feed, all of this is up at frogpants.com, so you can find it. If that's of any interest to anyone out there who has followed that career or Blizzard Entertainment in general or World of Warcraft, I think you'll dig it. And even then, I think it's got stuff in there for everybody. It's not just for gamers, so... Definitely check it out.
I'm enjoying the hell out of it. Like he just gets into the nitty-gritty of being a person in the creative world and says some things he says he's never revealed to anyone before. I'm sure he's revealed them to his wife, but not on the podcast.
Yeah, no, it's all very personal and up close, and it's been awesome. And he's pretty pleased with the support for it that we've had so far. I am very pleased with the response. It's been really nothing but positive. So do go check that out if you get a chance. I know you guys are gonna like it. In the meantime, visit our website, currentgeek.com, patreon.com/currentgeek. We are Current Geek on Twitter. And that's going to do it for today's episode. Come back next time for another Autopilot edition. That's Farscape. Until then, for me, for Tom, and for all of you, have a good one.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we update you on a case we covered over 2 years ago regarding a Kickstarter pulldown for a book entitled Oh, the Places You'll Boldly Go, and then turn to this week's Supreme Court oral arguments covering whether the U.S. ban on registering scandalous trademarks is constitutional. Back at the end of 2016, authors of a parody Star Trek Dr. Seuss mashup book, Oh, the Places You'll Boldly Go, had a Kickstarter pulled down for claims of copyright and trademark infringement by Dr. Seuss Enterprises. At the time we covered it on this segment, I opined that this book likely was fair use under copyright law, but it was a close call. Well, the battle over this book did end up going to court, and last month a California district court ruled that this parody mashup was protected by fair use. The court focused in the fair use analysis on the fact that while Boldly Go borrows heavily from the original Seuss work, everything taken is highly adapted or transformed to fit the Trek theme, and also that this book does not appear to substantively negatively impact the market for the original Seuss book, which remains strong. So count this as a win for creative mashup makers, although it is possible Seuss Enterprises will continue the battle with an appeal to the Ninth Circuit. Now we move to today's main topic, that being the oral arguments heard this week at the Supreme Court over the U.S. trademark law's ban on registering trademarks containing scandalous subject matter. The mark at hand in this particular case is F-U-C-T, which phonetically sounds like a past participle of the well-known profane word. According to court reporters, the justices went out of their way to avoid saying this trademark and similar examples, making for some fun leaps of language during the arguments with both sides' counsel. You'll recall that a similar trademark law ban on disparaging marks that disparage groups of people or individuals was struck down as unconstitutional 2 years ago when the band The Slants took their refusal of trademark all the way to the Supreme Court. Many trademark law experts opined that it was simply a matter of time before the similar ban on scandalous trademarks would be before the court, and they were correct. But the court during arguments did not seem as eager to strike this ban down as they were to do in the disparaging ban. One reason for this is that while the ban on disparaging trademarks was seen as viewpoint restriction, which comes with a heightened standard to be constitutional, banning vulgar language might be viewpoint neutral, and thus easier to support as constitutional. Indeed, some of the justices questioned whether this invoked First Amendment speech protection at all. On the other hand, the court was very critical in its questioning of the government's attorney regarding the wildly inconsistent application of this ban on prior trademark applicants. In one highlight example, Justice Ginsburg noted the irony that some prior trademark applications had been refused not because of this scandalous ban, but because they were too similar to other lewd terms that had previously been allowed and registered. The court just doesn't think this rule can be applied fairly. The bottom line is, while the U.S. Trademark Office and government probably has an easier case to defend this scandalous ban than they did 2 years ago in the disparagement ban case, it's hard to see the Supreme Court ruling that there's enough distinction between these bans to keep one, but not the other. I expect this ruling to come in June, and we will update you on when it comes, as one of the biggest trademark decisions on this year's court term. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.